Welcome to your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sutter. I'm joined once more by Max McCauley, MaxMCC11 on Twitter. If you are on Suns Twitter, go ahead and follow Max. He is one of the best over there. Brings a really fun engagement. He knows this stuff too, which is why I love having him on here. Max, how are you doing today? As the Suns are the hottest team and the most dangerous team in the Orlando bubble, who would have thought that a month ago?
No one would have thought that a week and a half ago. And of course I'm doing well, Evan. I mean, how could you not be doing well as a Suns fan right now? How are you doing?
Doing well. And I told you off the air, I just want to start with you on this because it's just incredible what the Suns are doing right now. Just being so cohesive. The offense is firing on all cylinders right now. The defense too is locking in. The bench is doing well for the first time really all season. The bubble, they just turned into a completely different bench unit. What in the hell has got into the Suns team, Max?
It's a great question. I think last time we spoke, we did mention the health. Like, you know, they have most of their guys back. Of course, they don't have Oubre and Baines. But even the guys who played a lot of the season, you know, they're fresher. And guys like Rubio really need to be fresh. I think that's helping a lot. But I think the biggest thing, beyond maybe the progression of some of the young players, you know, obviously the great, insane play of Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges becoming an all-defensive player, you know, all those things. I think it's really the bench unit being stabilized. And primary credit for that goes to Cameron Payne. And you and I were kind of hesitant to give him too much credit, Evan. I think everyone was a little scared that he was going to turn into a pumpkin, but it's not happened, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen. I mean, Cameron Payne appears to be here to stay. His defense has been fantastic. He's, I was looking at the advanced stats a little bit earlier. He's like at the top of the team defensively for us. His energy is great on offense. I think he pushes the ball really well. He's finishing better than I thought he would. He's shooting really well. I think he's at 50% from three, so I think if you're going to point to one single thing that's the biggest change, it's the guy we signed.
Yeah, which is crazy to say. Who would have thought campaign would be the one that sparks the second unit? But looking at the Miami game where the Suns won 119-112 in the Thunder game, which the Suns won today 128-101 after a really awful start in the first quarter where the Suns eventually blew them out by almost 50 points throughout the last three quarters of that game. Campaign had 5 points, five assists, five rebounds against Miami in 21 minutes and against OKC today. 14.6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals in 33 minutes. Incredible what Campaign's doing right now. And look at his backcourt teammate as well, Javon Carter. I'd be remiss not to start this off. We're going to hit the Miami game first, Max, and dive into OKC. The Javon Carter game finally happened. And we've seen these types of games happen for guys like Cam Johnson, Campaign, others throughout the year. But for the first time, even throughout the regular season, we didn't really see this kind of game from Javon Carter. And he finally gave the Suns that spark in a game where DeAndre Ayton was horrible. I'm just being frankly honest there. He had 18 and 12 and 2, but 36 minutes, he was just very lethargic on both ends of the court. And Javon Carter helped save that game, Max, where even though the Heat were without Jimmy Butler, Javon Carter was 7 of 10, 6 of 8 from 3 with 20 points to add in 3 assists, a steal, and a block, and a plus 11 in the plus minus category. Without Javon Carter, the Suns are not still undefeated.
Absolutely true. They definitely don't win the Miami game without him. And, you know, listen, Javon Carter has limitations. You'd like to be, for a player type like Kim, who's really a classic 3-and-D player, but he's small is his problem. He's still not much of a playmaker. I don't know that he ever will be. But when he's playing this, he's shooting this well on offense, it justifies his position there. You know, if he's shooting, he's at 50% right now. But, you know, if he's in the 40s, and he justifies himself as what he does on defense, right? And, you know, he's not going to be the guy who's going to be the anchor of your defense because he can't guard that many people. But what he can do is he can make plays on defense, and I think we saw that especially highlighted in the Miami game. One of the best defensive plays I've seen all season, to be quite frank, was the one where he made a really bad play on the offensive end to give the ball. Bam Adebayo was streaking down the court, and Javon just stays with him the whole time. Really looks like he's going to foul him. The whole time I was thinking, man, you're really going to foul Bam Adebayo, and this would be a really bad foul. And instead, he strips him, takes him back down the other side of the court, and makes a play with it. So just an unbelievable play by him. It really shows you kind of like how far determination can get you as an NBA player. He has it in spades, and you know I don't think he'll keep playing quite this well, but if he can keep shooting at a reasonable clip and playing this defense, he deserves to keep playing.
I don't want to look too much into it, of course, Max. There's only been 6 games in the bubble so far. But looking ahead to next year, are you buying into Campaign and Javon Carter kind of sharing that backup point guard role next year, at least playing together more often in the second unit? Because I know it's only 6 games, but just the results, especially the net rating, the Carter-Payne two-man duo is one of the best on the team so far in the bubble. Do you think there's any sort of equity there you could put into as far as maybe you buy into this?
Real good question. It's hard, right? I mean, I think they're going to – backup guard is going to be a position they're going to be looking at. I'm glad to see that campaign solidified it and Javon Carter has looked really good, but it's still going to be something they're looking at in free agency, I would imagine, you know, whether it's Fred VanVleet, you know, go for the big name or somebody else, something they're going to be looking at. But campaign's definitely coming back. I'd be shocked if he didn't. They have that – I mean, James Jones had that brilliant team option on his contract, so they can bring him back next year for, I think, the league minimum. So I don't see why he wouldn't be back. Javon Carter, I believe, is a free agent. Not kind of sure. You know, again, he's a hard fit. He's a weird player, so I'm not totally sure what his market will be. I'm sure the Suns would be happy to have him back, but eventually this guard rotation is going to get a little bit jammed. Because I think they're going to sign somebody, maybe Jalen Acute or something. They could draft somebody. This guard is very draft heavy, so I don't know, Evan. What do you think? Do you think that two has a future together, or you think it's maybe a summer fling?
I think, like you mentioned, I think campaign's definitely back next year, Javon Carter too, but I just wonder if they're just going to be maybe your 12th, 13th man next year instead of your 9th, 10th guy, because like you mentioned, I think backup guard is the spot on this team that in the second unit, you kind of have your pieces in place here. Just assuming hypothetically Kelly Oubre buys into a 6-man, really have Oubre off the bench, you have Dario off the bench, re-sign Aaron Baines to 1-year deal, and all you're missing at that point is that backup guard who can stabilize everything. Of course, campaign's doing it so far through 6 games. Javon Carter's bringing that energy too. But I think both those guys off your bench, in case of emergency glass breaks where Rubio gets hurt again next year or something like that, I think those guys make a lot of sense, just being extra depth on that team. And I don't know if I want to buy too much into it just yet because it's only been 6 games. But without these two players, Max, I mean, who knows where the Suns would be at this point? Maybe 500 through the bubble so far, if not for these two?
Yeah, that's what I would guess. I was actually going to say 3-3 when you said that. You know, maybe 4-2 because of some of the way, you know, Booker's been playing. But, I mean, those two have each contributed in every single game something. And in multiple games, they've been one of the best players for the Suns. It's really remarkable, Evan. What would I have told you if I would have told you that I would have said the Suns were going to be 6-0 in the bubble and it's going to be largely due to campaign and Javon Carter 2 months ago? I don't think you would have believed me, Evan.
Oh, I know. I wouldn't have either. And it just goes to show you just how wild and crazy this bubble has been so far for the Suns team, because when Javon Carter and campaign are two of your best players in the bubble outside Devin Booker, is really going supernova right now, taking that superstar. They're going to hit on him next. And it just goes to show you the incredible run the Suns are on right now, 6-0 in the bubble, and they're now 32-39 in the season. We're going to hit on Devin Booker now because, like I just teased there, Max, he's – taking another level. I mean, every single time there's a break in the season, like a hiatus or like a pseudo offseason, so to say, Devin Booker always improves. And is it time to say, Max, that he's taken the superstar leap before our eyes? Because these last two games, 35 points with 0 3-pointers made. He was only got to the free throw line, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. All of his shots were incredible 2-point shots around the rim against Miami. It really propelled that team throughout. When the Heat were making a run, Booker would be like, nope, no, no. And then he would close the door on him once more. And then OKC, just ridiculous, 35 points, 14 of 14 from the free throw line, 9 of 17 from the field, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, plus 15 in the plus-minus category. Just goes to show you, just I think Booker at this point is a superstar, right, Max?
Yeah, and I wouldn't forget in the OKC game, I don't think he played in the fourth quarter at all. Nope. So unbelievable. And that shot from half court was just stupid. But Devin Booker, so I tweeted this on Saturday night, and a couple people got mad at me for, you know, think I'm jinxing him. But I pointed out, like, he hasn't really had a bad game in a while, like a game you could possibly call bad, definitely not in the bubble. And, you know, that's really that superstar tier that you reach when, you know, the LeBrons and the Kawhis and the Giannis, et cetera, even when they don't have, like, a great game by their standards, they still have an incredible game that impacts, you know, that for anybody else would be a star, one of their best games. And Booker's starting to reach that level now where – every night out, he is going to be a positive impact. You know, even those games where he had foul trouble, he still was awesome in those games. He'd come back and he really settled things. Indiana was a good example. The one where, you know, he had 5 fouls in the third quarter, and it was a terrible foul that was the 5th foul that took him out. And then he comes back with about, you know, 8 minutes or so, maybe 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and just like hits like 4 buckets in a row. It's just awesome. And that's really what a superstar is to me, a player you can count on to be awesome every single night. And again, I don't really mad at you for jinxing this, but it kind of feels like Booker's there now.
I would agree with you. I think Booker at this point is a player that if you move him throughout the NBA ranks right now, Max, I mean, I know this is maybe a little too much at this point because I know it's only a short sample size of the bubble, but we know that player that Booker is throughout his career so far in Phoenix. Is he in that sort of like Damian Lillard tier to you where he's like in that tier 2 superstar right now? I know maybe that's a little much. He's only 23 years old, but I mean, I can't imagine what Booker's going to be like when he's 27, Max. Like, I mean, if this is what he's doing at 23 years old, and by the way, he already tied the franchise record today for the most 30-point games. He's only 23 years old, 30-point games, which ties Walter Davis, who took in 400 extra games than Devin Booker did. I mean, the sky's the limit for this guy.
That's insane. I had not realized that stat. As far as where he ranks right now, I mean, I think – so Damian Lillard is – that's kind of where I – often a comp for him that I have with Booker is I want him to get to kind of where Dame is a little bit. Him and Harden are the ones you look at. And, I mean, I don't think he's there yet. I mean, Dame is just so ridiculous. Didn't he pour in 51 the other night against Philly? Dame's stupidly good. But, I mean, Booker is definitely closing the gap there. Like, it's not as ridiculous to put him in that conversation. I mean, if you want to go by numbers, he's probably – I don't know what, like the 15th best player in the NBA, 10 to 15. And the NBA is stacked now. So that is nothing bad to say about Booker that he'd be in that range. And as far as him getting better, I think you make a good point. You've referenced it a couple times here. The guy, every time he comes back from an offseason or any kind of extended break, he's better. And that is just so encouraging that he always improves. And that's why kind of the last thing for him, at least offensively, Evan, is the three-point shooting. That's the one thing that hasn't totally come around for him yet, even though that's what he was billed as coming into the draft. That's all he could do. So that's kind of funny how that worked out. But, I mean, obviously, the three-point contest, he's been fantastic in. He's clearly capable of shooting three-pointers. He made one from half court today. So I think that's kind of the next development in his game. When he can really round that out, he's going to be unbelievably unstoppable in offense.
It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code MBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code MBA, for 25% off a purse of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Suns fans, take advantage of this deal right away.
Yeah, I think that pull-up three, like that Dame Lillard, Trae Young type of shot, is the missing element to Booker's game. We're kind of seeing more and more of it throughout this bubble so far. He's attempting almost four pull-up threes per game, which is doubling his amount throughout the regular season beforehand. And Booker's stats, real quick, Max, throughout this bubble are just insane to look at. 30.3 points, 6 assists, 50, 33, 94 shooting splits. And he's only shooting 33% from three, which goes to show you his insane clip from two-point range, which is right around 57% so far. And it's probably even higher after today's OKC game. It's just incredible what he's doing so far, propelling this team continuously into the possibility of being in this playing game. And I think Booker's reaching this point now, entering into 2020-2021. I think he might be a 30-plus point per game scorer next year, Max. I mean, it just depends how the roster's tweaked around here. But is the next step to you for Booker maybe a scoring title? Like, I feel like we're closing in pretty close, and it's crazy to say at his young of age.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's absolutely right, I think. I mean, you know, the scoring title is always going to be tough when you have the talent in the league we have right now. Like James Harden, you know, wasn't he averaging almost 40 at one point this season? Yet Giannis, who like, I think per 36, he's averaging like 35 points. So there's a lot of great players and scorers in this league, but I don't know if there's anybody who is as well-rounded as Devin Booker is. I tweeted the other day that I think he's like already a historically great mid-range shooter. I think that's one thing that separates him from guys like James Harden and even Giannis. You know, even like I guess Kawhi is like maybe the best example of this. Like he's so good from the mid range. He makes incredible shots in that area, and that's looked down upon now in the modern NBA. And of course, Booker's also great. You know, as a get to the line free throw guy, and I think eventually he'll be a good 3-point shooter. But his bread and butter is in the mid range, and I think that why that is so important is not your overall efficiency in a game, but it's your ability to get your own shot at the end of a game. And obviously, we saw that against the Clippers. We've seen that a lot in Booker's career. It's very easy for Booker to get a good shot for him that he thinks is going to go in towards the end of games because that's kind of where the mid-range is made for in the modern NBA. So I think it's kind of an underrated thing about him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's maybe the best mid-range scorer that we've seen, at least from a young player since Kevin Durant. I could come back to that comparison because his mid-range game is insane. And you look at his prime and the way he's able to get consistent scoring tiles. I think that might be in Booker's future in the very, very near horizon. But let's touch really quickly on Cam Johnson too, Max, because he's been a revelation in the bubble so far too. Against Miami, he had 14 points, 3 rebounds, a steal, and a block, plus 7 in the plus minus category on 5 of 6 shooting, 27 minutes. Then against OKC, he was 18 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks – on 6 of 11 shooting, 4 of 8 from 3. So far through the bubble, Max, he's over 50-40-90 shooting splits. He's averaging 14.2 points on 50-40-100% from the free throw line shooting splits, adding in almost 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and a steal per game. Cam Johnson, I think, Max, at this point, I know Kelly Oubre has that possibility of playing himself back into this lineup if he does improve next year, if the Suns want to keep him around, but why mess with what's so great so far? This net rating with Cam Johnson so far throughout the year, what he plays with the starters, is plus 20.4, which is the best on this team. I just think Cam fits so well in the modern NBA as a stretch four, and he is definitely exceeding expectations as far as being a scorer and as far as being able to be a good defender, because we all talked throughout the pre-draft process and really throughout after the selection of Cam Johnson that he was probably going to be a really, really bad defender, and he's been anything but that so far in the bubble too. Been really good on that end, to be honest. What's been your impression of Cam Johnson the last two games and throughout the bubble so far, Max? Because I think this player is ascending.
I just think he's wonderful. I love him. I think he's the one who makes you the happiest, maybe other than Booker right now watching. Like, I texted my buddies who are Suns fans, like, while watching, I can't help myself from texting. I just love Cam. I can't remember the last time I was this confident about a 3-point shooter on the Suns threes going in. It has to have been during the Nash era, maybe even Steve Nash himself. Every single time Cam Johnson shoots the ball, I just believe it's going in because it looks so gorgeous. And lately it has been going in, so that's been nice. But yeah, I think the big thing, we knew he could shoot, and he's doing everything else. And to be playing in starting fours, like he's starting at four and holding up, that is so important for him going forward. If he can keep doing that, it makes his offense so much better, right? Because you can get him out there against starters to space the four for Booker and Ayton, and it's just so key. I think lineup-wise, I think him at the four has been the big reason why this has worked so well. I think it kind of just makes all the other pieces fall into place. Another stat that I think is amazing, and it's important for a power forward, he's third on the team in rebounds per game right now. Part of that's because he's playing a lot of minutes, but like, hey, he was not billed as somebody who could get rebounds coming out of the draft. Not at all. That was not something you could hear. And I think I heard a stat on some podcast. I forget which one, so sorry for whoever said this, but the Suns are giving up, like, I think the least amount of offensive rebounds of any team in the league right now. It's something like that. And I think that's part of that is because, you know, you're getting that great rebounding from Ayton, and then Cam at the four is holding up fine. So I mean, I could not be happier with him, Evan. I think he's been absolutely great, and I now view him as kind of like a surefire piece for this team going forward.
That's a great sign, because if you add Cam Johnson to this core of – it's really certified core of Booker, Ayton, Bridges, add Cam Johnson, that you have four of your five pieces. And Ricky Rubio, of course, is a very solid point guard veteran who will help lead this team. And he's that leader in the locker room that they absolutely need right now in this point of their rebuild. But your impression so far, Max, of this Johnson-Bridges duo on the wing, because the more I see it, the more I just think, and I realize James Jones' vision here, that these two guys are high usage, are sort of the yin and the yang of each other. Bridges is the 3-and-D quintessential player and elite future All-NBA defender. Cam Johnson, that sniper who can do a little bit of everything too. And they're both low usage too. They don't need a lot of time to have the ball in their hands, unlike Kelly Oubre. I think these two fit so well with Booker and Ayton.
I totally agree. And I think long-term, I mean, listen, I love what Rubio is bringing, but, you know, Rubio is no spring chicken. He's not going to be here for the, you know, I guess, what would you call it, the contending phase of this team's career. He's kind of one of the bring them to contention guys. They're going to find somebody else for the contention part of it. And I think they're going to be looking for somebody who is maybe a little better off the ball than Ricky is. Ricky's not terrible, and he's been decent shooting in this tournament. I call it a tournament. It feels like a tournament, but I guess it's just regular season games. But he's been pretty good. But I think what they really want is somebody who could really, really shoot the ball and someone who's kind of a bigger point guard who could defend. Maybe think about, you know, what Lonzo was supposed to be. Something like that, I think, is what they really want long term. In terms of the wings – Mikal and Cam could not be more of what you want. This is probably the time to rave up Mikal, right? So do you think Mikal Bridges could be first team all defense next season?
I think I would not rule that out, Max. I mean, maybe some nationally will scoff at that notion, but if you watch this Suns team every day and you watch this team in the bubble so far, I mean, he's locked up. I mean, you can gloss over the stats and look hyperanalyze all you want, but he locked up Luka Doncic in multiple possessions against Dallas. Mm-hmm. He locked up Kawhi Leonard, held in the 2-of-8 shooting. He locked up TJ Warren. He's been going off in the bubble so far. That was the only bad game was when he was guarded by Mikal Bridges. Then he did the same thing against players like Duncan Robinson. Of course, Duncan Robinson could get his shots off. He's a very good shooter, but only 4-12 from three for a 40% 3-point shooter throughout the year. And then against OKC, Mikal did his thing once more. I mean, I think it's fair to say, Max, if he's a good
I mean, if this is the kind of games we see from Mikal moving forward here, and he's just a little more aggressive offensively, he's just a little bit more empowered on that end, he's already going to be one of the best 3-and-D weeks in the NBA, right?
Absolutely. And I think a key stat that I'm not sure how many people know about this, and this is before today's game, so I'll give that caveat, but the Suns, I think, in the bubble were they were like the 8th offense in efficiency, I think, but they were the 4th defense in efficiency. And I think part of that's three-point luck. They're getting a little bit lucky on three-pointers. But I think the other part of it is they always have, like, okay defenders on the floor now. And whenever Bakel's on the floor, they have, like, a true defensive anchor. They have somebody who, when he's on the floor, it's hard for your defense to be bad. And, of course, Ayton, too. And Ayton, especially when Ayton's engaged, he's just gigantic and in the way. Like, Ayton and Bakel, it's not easy to score against a team that has those guys. And when you have guys, and you have like Javon Carter and Campaign on the outside, kind of being pests, and they're being absolute pests, like that's crazy defensive. It starts to get hard to play against. And so I think, you know, Booker's getting a lot of credit for making the offense consistently good and well deserved. He deserves it. But I think Mikal Bridges deserves a little more credit for having this defense good every single night.
I totally agree with you there, Max. And you look at Mikal's game. I mean, I think the sky's the limit for him too. If he's just more aggressive offensively, he's going to be a player who might eventually be, maybe this is too hyperbole, but maybe a future all-star. I mean, if he plays like this and he's a good shooter, he averages 16, 17 points per game, why can't he be an all-star at this point? If he's going to be a plus 40% three-point shooter, a great defender, all-NBA type defender. I think that ceiling is definitely there for Mikal Bridges here, but maybe this is sort of the negative of our show, Max, I wanted to hit on, because DeAndre Ayton, it was a very eventful weekend for him, including today's game. I mean, like I mentioned at the top of the show, he had, of course, the box score would tell they did had a good game against Miami, 18-12-2 on 7-15 shooting, but very lackadaisical defensively, had no blocks, no steals in that game. The Heat were just bullying him on pick and rolls. Tyler Hero was getting wherever he wanted against DeAndre Ayton, too. Bam had his way against him, too. And kind of late in that game, Ayton sort of had some easy buckets fed to him from Rubio and Booker. That kind of helped the stats a little bit. And then against OKC, I think just an inexcusable thing that happened before the game. Missing his COVID-19 testing on Sunday, had to get retested Monday morning, returned for the second quarter, and of course helped that Suns team get back in that game and win. The Suns outscored the Thunder 42-27 in the second quarter once Ayton returned, and he had 10 points, 6 rebounds in 17 minutes today and was a plus 22. But these types of mistakes from Ayton, and we'll talk about the Heat game, the defense in a second here, Max, but the suspension, the 25-game suspension, I tweeted about it today. Just these kind of just inexcusable, just reckless mistakes from DeAndre Ayton are just inexcusable at this point.
You want to just shake him, don't you? And just be like, dude, you could be so good. What are you doing? He's just immature, Evan. It's really all it comes down to. And we have to remember these kids are young and, you know, a lot of them are going to act like kids. But it's obviously inexcusable, especially given what happened with earlier in the season when he was suspended for 25 games. Like, you would think after you kind of embarrass yourself and your team and you let your team down that way, you would not do it again. But he kind of did. But, you know, we're trying to keep this podcast positive, Evan, so yeah. Let's go with the positive. When he came back in the second quarter, the team stabilized. And it wasn't all because of him, but I think his presence – we got to see how much his presence matters, didn't we? Like, we need him there. He's a hard guy to play offense against, I think, is what we're learning. Like, to have a guy who is 7'1" and moves the way he does, like – it makes you think all the time. And even when he's not getting blocks, he's deterring shots. He's making it harder to play offense against you. And I think the way that we outscored OKC in those three quarters after the first quarter shows you how much we need him. And I hope he saw that. And I really hope, you know, I hope he apologized to his teammates, and I hope he doesn't do it again. But, you know, we're going to have to let his actions speak louder than his words, because he has a lot of words, and his actions have not lived up to them so far.
RockAuto.com is the best place to get your car fixed. Many people have told me already that Rock Auto has saved them so much money in their pockets, and you would be wise to do so, because RockAuto.com will put more money back in your pocket too, because it is reliably more superior as far as saving money than the random big chain stores around the entire U.S. For example, a fuel pump assembly for a Honda Odyssey is $353 at a big chain store and only $217 at RockAuto.com. And it's all convenient to yourself, too. You can do it online through your own home, and you don't have to go into the big stores and really ask difficult questions for what you have to get done for your car. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for 20-plus years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate.
Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and price you prefer. And best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals, do-it-yourselfers. So why spend twice as much for the same parts you can get even cheaper at Rock Auto? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear Us box and that we sent you. Again, that's right, Locked On, LOCKEDON, in their How'd You Hear Us box, so that no Locked On son sent you right over.
I don't mean to pivot back into McHale for a second, Max, but I mean, thinking about him with Ayton on defense, I think that just brings more confidence to Ayton with a player like McHale in front of him, where I remember in the scrimmage game against Toronto where Pascal Siakam was sort of just like freaking out when McHale switched on him, where he thought, wow, I have to go against this guy once more. We've seen throughout the bubble so far where I think McHale's reached that point already, which is crazy to say, that he's intimidating players on the offensive end when he gets locked up against them, because they know around the association how good a defender he is. And when you funnel, when Bridges funnels his guy into DeAndre Ayton, that's a really fun combo to look at defensively.
Absolutely. I mean, could you imagine being an offensive player and Mikal Bridges comes and guards you, and his arms are like, they're like 7 feet long, and you can't even dribble around him. So you're just like trying to get around him. And then when you get to the rim, finally, you have 7 foot one, seven, whatever it is, six wingspan DeAndre Ayton in front of you. Like, that is not an easy thing to play offense against. It really isn't. And that's why, like, man, as much as like anybody could talk about the Luka thing, and obviously I'm a huge Luka guy and I love Luka, but I do think that there is a world where there's a really nice fit here with Booker, and then you have just the Ayton and then Bridges around him, and you get two other guys who can defend a little and shoot a little. Cam Johnson's looking that way. Like, it makes a lot of sense conceptually to surround Booker with a team like that. Like, if you get like a Jonathan Isaac to join this team, like, you just make a team this giant defensive web around Booker. It would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I'm really curious to see what kind of the final pieces the Suns add around this Booker rebuild, because I think they're closing in on a really successful one so far, Max. I think maybe this bubble is a sneak peek into what happens next season. But let's go to Dario Saric for a second, because we had him on our last show when we had you on, Max, and he's continuing his hot streak so far off the bench for the Suns team against Miami. He was very pivotal in that one. He helped lead that run with Campaign and Javon Carter. He had 10 points, 8 rebounds, and a steal on 2 of 5 shooting in 22 minutes. I think it's OKC. He started in Ayton's place and then went back to his usual minutes, playing only 23 minutes in that game, had 16 points, 9 rebounds, 2 steals, chipped in a steal and a block as well. And overall, throughout the bubble so far, Max, in 6 games, Dario's averaging 14 points, 7.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, and chipping in half a steal, as well as doing that in only 23.5 minutes too, Max. I think Dario finally found the perfect role for himself.
I really agree. I totally agree. So he really struggled, and Suns fans who watched all the games will remember this. Like, he had a hard time against starting lineups when he would try to like drive in a little bit and then he would just get blocked. He had a hard time against starting units trying to play offense because his game is very weird, especially like when he tries to do this post game. Like, it could be effective against certain players. Early in the Clippers fourth quarter, he was very effective. I think it was against Patrick Patterson, maybe Jermichael Green, but I think it was Patrick Patterson. He was really kind of abusing him early on. So certain players, he can really do that against, but his game doesn't work very well against the best players in the NBA. So I think he is definitely well-suited for a bench role. And as long as he's shooting and playing like this, yeah, you want to bring him back. I mean, you wonder a little bit, is this a contract, you know, contract year sort of thing? He knows, you know, the bubble's getting a lot of attention. The Suns are finally getting watched. Can he get, you know, a bigger contract playing hard, you know, for these 8 games, hopefully more than 8 games. But, you know, assuming we get the Dario we're seeing going forward, I would be very happy to resign him.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know this is kind of impossible to look at because the COVID-19 offseason we're going to be experiencing in the NBA is going to be really weird, I think, from a salary perspective and how teams really maneuver free agency and trades. But I wonder if the Suns can bring back Dario and his restricted tag of $5.1 million, maybe just sign like a deal that's $6 to $7 million per year. I'm all aboard that at this point, Max. Are you?
100%. Yep. I wonder if he's playing his way to a higher number. I'm not totally sure, but I would absolutely sign that.
Moving on, Max, into our last few points of the show I wanted to hit on with you, because this Suns team, of course, is 6-0 on the bubble so far. They are really doing well for themselves. And I wanted to just hit on Monty Williams for a second with you, because the way he had this team prepared moving forward, I think, is just incredible. Because DeAndre mentioned on the Woj pod when he was on today with Adrian Wojnarowski that the training camp they had beforehand in Orlando was the most intense that they've had throughout the season so far. Monty mentioned it was a playoff atmosphere and he wanted this team to play like they were in the playoffs, and they're definitely responding to the way Monty's been coaching them so far. What's been your impression of Monty Williams in the bubble? Because I think even though it's hard for maybe a coach to improve, I just think maybe he has, and I think if it's not that the players have completely bought into his style.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I don't know how you could have a single bad thing to say about Monty Williams right now, right? He has to be the only person besides Booker, maybe, and Cam Johnson, who has 100% approval rating in the Suns fan base right now. I mean, this team's playing harder than it's played since the Nash era, maybe that 2014 team. But, like, and given how many young guys they have and how many new guys they have, like, campaigns completely out of nowhere, right? They really haven't had this group the whole season, and the way they've really gelled so quickly, and how they seem to really know what they're doing. Everyone's role is very clear to them, it seems like. No one seems like – when they're out there, no one's confused why they're there, besides maybe Frank Kaminsky would be the only person. But everybody else seems like they really know what they're doing out there, and I don't know how you don't credit Monty for that. It seems like he's handling – I think he handled the Ayton thing really well today. He just handles – he's an adult. He's the adult the Suns needed. They haven't had it for 5 years, and they finally found him, and – I mean, it's great. I love Monty Williams, Evan.
Looking at their bubble numbers so far from an advanced metrics perspective, Max, it's pretty incredible. 115.6 offensive rating, which is 8th so far in the bubble. 104.5 defensive rating, 2nd in the NBA right now in the bubble behind the Toronto Raptors, which is crazy. From where the Suns were at the end of the season, I think they were in the mid-20s in defensive rating. To take that kind of leaps is really incredible. And 11.1 net rating, the best in the NBA. The Boston Celtics are 2nd with 9.3, so kind of a sizable lead with number 1 at that end. So this team is playing really incredible right now, Max. And looking ahead the next few games here for this team, I think it's breaking correctly for them as far as they've had everything go their way so far in the bubble. It looks like tomorrow against Philadelphia, no Joel Embiid with an ankle injury, no Ben Simmons with a knee injury. Then Dallas at that point in their last game, probably Luka and those rest of those guys are going to be resting, because it sounded from all indications per what Kellen Olson was listening to Rick Carlisle's press conference that Luka and Kristaps Porzingis will play tomorrow against the Portland Trailblazers. So if Luka can help them out and give them a little Luka magic, and then Luka sits out against the Suns in their final game, the Suns might be in the play-in tournament, Max, which is crazy to even think.
It is completely wild, and man, there's still so much that has to be done, right? Like, Memphis can't win a game, or Portland, you know, can only they have to lose one of these two games. So it's going to be really tough. I mean, Dame is, you know, I would never bet against Dame. I don't rely on Portland to lose one of these games. I'd love for Luka and KP to come back tomorrow and beat the Portland Trailblazers. But let me ask you this: you think Dame's losing one of these two games, Evan?
With the way he played against Philadelphia, 51 points, and at the end there, he almost like Devin Booker at this point, he just closed the door shut whenever you want to get back in a game. I'm doubting it. I'm more betting on Memphis at this point, because it sounds like that Boston is going to play their starters against the Grizzlies tomorrow. But the big question is that the Bucks will, because at that point, I think they already have the one seed locked up. So will Coach Bud even want to play those guys, is the thing. And if Memphis will even lose that game, because they're going to want incentive to at least close the season on a good note there. So I'm more so betting on Memphis, because betting against Damian Lillard is almost like betting against Devin Booker at this point, where those two guys are just in fuego and you don't want to bet against them right now.
Yeah, I very much agree. I'm watching Memphis more. I mean, I'd love to see Portland lose. And honestly, the best thing obviously would be if Portland loses one of these two and Memphis loses out and we win out, obviously, and we get the 8 seed, right? Like, the 8 seed would be huge, because I can't remember which podcast I was listening to again that was saying this, but like, no matter who gets the 8 versus the 9, like, if it's Memphis versus Portland or Memphis versus Phoenix and Memphis is the 8, they're still favored because you have to beat them twice. And I think what they were saying is, like, if you have a 60% chance to win a game, two games in a row, then you only have a 30% chance to win overall, because, you know, you have to win twice. So no matter what, the most important thing, we get the 8 seed. So if we get the 8 seed, especially against Memphis, that's really what we want. You know, that's a lot to be said. We still have to beat Philly tomorrow. I know Embiid and Simmons are out, but, man, they gave Portland a game after Embiid went out. I can't remember who was making this point, but when the stars go out, sometimes, like, the players who aren't the stars really play really, really hard because they want to show what they can do, right? And I think that's what Josh Richardson was doing in that game against Portland. So I'm nervous a little bit of the Philly game. I don't want to get too high before that. But, man, Evan, the fact that we're even this close and we're even talking about this is unbelievable.
It really is, and the Suns are the story of the Orlando bubble so far. And these last two victories, the 119-112 win over the Miami Heat and the 128-101 blowout win over the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, by the way, just wanted to throw a caveat in there. There was no Steven Adams, no SGA, no Nerlens Noel, no Gallo. So they really saw a JV version of the OKC Thunder today. Chris Paul, of course, played, but limited minutes, 24 minutes too. So
the Suns take any breaks they get at this point. And I think they're hoping for more breaks. They have to have more break their way. If the Phillies, Philadelphia doesn't play Embiid and Simmons tomorrow, that's another plus for them. And they'll have to do some forward watching too. But Max, I really appreciate the time today. I really enjoyed the conversation. You guys can go follow Max on Twitter at MaxMCC11. And we're going to keep watching and having our fingers crossed here, Max, because who would have thought that the Suns would be in this position? So appreciate the time, man.
Of course. Would not have thought. Next time we'll do one after the Suns are up 1-0 against the Lakers in the first round. How about that?
Oh, I'm totally down for that, Max.
thanks for having me on, man.